Phantom Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, Shield of Lies, Book 2 of the Black Fleet Crisis by Michael P. QB McDowell. Part 1. Lando. The Teljikon Vagabond was on the run once more. But this time there were hitchhikers aboard.
Hyperspace, C-3PO echoed as he struggled to free himself.
The droid's limbs were tangled up with Lobot, R2-D2, and the equipment sled in one corner of the Vagabond's airlock, a chamber which had suddenly become a space-going prison.
Master Lobot, did you say we're in hyperspace?
Lobot pushed a flailing golden leg away from his faceplate.
I am not mistaken. All my data links terminated at the same moment in the manner I associate with a hyperspace jump.
Lando spoke up from the opposite corner of the lock.
There was a course change, too, during the acceleration.
He flexed his bare right hand, trying to drive the bone-chilling cold from his fingers. He'd lost his glove when they were separated from the airlock. His wrist cuff sealed off his suit, fortunately, keeping it pressurized, at least.
Master Lando, can't you make it stop?
I didn't make it start, 3PO.
With all respect, Master Lando, you most certainly did. Now you just reach back in that hole and undo whatever you did, and quickly, too. Colonel Puck Picard will be most upset with us for running off with his starship.
At least Colonel Puck Picard is on a ship he can boss. We're not. Any damage over there, Lobot? R2-D2?
The little astromech droid emerged from the jumble of bodies.
I'm uninjured, Lando, said Lobot. My suit took the impact of the equipment sled, but my data links are still all down, and I am finding it disorienting.
R2, give Lobot a link to your event log. There might be something in there we can use to figure out what happened. It looks to me like we're no longer invited guests and welcome visitors on this craft. She shook off Lady Luck and tried to spit us out. Probably would have succeeded if she hadn't been trying to run away from Pak Pakot's task force at the same time.
Which raises a question, said Lobot. Why didn't she know?
I'm listening, said Lando.
It appears to be a misjudgment. Two defense routines were activated without consideration of their combined effect. Also, this compartment began repressurizing after the entry was sealed. That appears to be another inconsistency. These events suggest that the ship is either under the control of systems with limited intelligence or under the control of beings with limited intelligence.
Lando sighed.
I'm sure this much. That lock closed because of the jump. Not as any favor to us. We're not wanted here. And if we're not clear of this compartment by the time the Vagabond leaves hyperspace, I don't think too much of our chances.
3PO raised his arms and began calling out to whoever or whatever might be listening.
We apologize. Please, believe me. I never meant to harm anyone.
Shut up, 3PO.
Yes, sir.
Lando, said Lobot.
What?
It couldn't hurt. Diplomatic words are the tool 3PO is best equipped to wield. And perhaps an apology will prove to be the key that will open the next door.
Sighing, Lando waved his gloved hand toward C-3PO.
All right, but 3PO, a little dignity, please.
Of course, Master Lando. I am programmed to conduct myself in a dignified manner at all times.
While R2 searched for any inflow vents that could be responsible for maintaining pressure, 3PO made entreaties to the Vagabond's masters, and Lobot analyzed the acceleration and astrographic data and inventoried the equipment on the sled. Lando, after improvising a glove from a plastic sample bag, returned to the control handle in the corner of the compartment to see if it would respond to him. The handle proved immovable. Lando returned to where Lobot and the equipment sled floated.
Did you get anything out of R2's data?
Lobot rattled off a series of numbers.
I believe I have our heading prior to the jump to within half a degree. I apologize for the imprecision. The nearest body that is close enough to the center of the flight path and has a large enough gravity shadow to force the ship out of hyperspace is 41.53 light-years away.
3PO volunteered. R2 says that in 12.9 light-years, this vessel will enter the most isolated region along this flight path. At that point, there will be no charted bodies larger than a Class 5 comet for nearly 9 light-years in any direction.
Lando sighed.
Now, sounds like a good place to make a course change, and far enough out to give us a little time to work with. R2, what'd you find out about the pressure?
3PO translated.
Master Lando, R2 says that there are no inflow vents anywhere in this chamber.
What? Then how was this chamber repressurized?
According to R2, the atmospheric gases are passing through the bulkheads molecule by molecule.
Let me get this straight. These bulkheads are porous?
No, Master Lando. R2 says that molecules of gas simply appear on the surface.
3PO, give me a report on your progress.
The golden droid cocked his head.
Sir, so far I have hailed the masters of this vessel in 11,463 languages, offering our abject apologies and asking for their assistance. I will be able to complete the initial series in 4.2 standard days.
That's about what I figured. Lobot, dig out the cutting blaster. We're going to have to make our own door.
With a grim expression on his face, Admiral Hiram Drayson, head of Alpha Blue, sat on the edge of his desk and studied the final contact report from Colonel Pakwakat at the Miraskula. The recordings from the spotter ships were dramatic and alarming. Moments before the Vagabond broke away, a ring of six rounded bumps, accumulator nodes or beam radiators, Drayson thought, appeared at the forward end of the ship. A fierce blue light began to dance over the bow. Then twin beams of energy shot out from two of the nodes and scissored back through the gap between the Vagabond and Lady Luck, slicing them apart. Another pair of beams carved through the interdiction generator on the underbelly of the Picket Cowrie. The instant Cowrie was neutralized, the Vagabond began to move, accelerating out past the disabled Picket's position, well clear of the remaining interdictors. Just 42 seconds after it began, it was over, the Vagabond vanishing into the center of a hyperspace cone. It was beyond dispute now that the Vagabond's weapons were compound. The intersection of two or more beams did the damage, probably through some sort of harmonic resonance. It seemed as though six targets were all the Vagabond could handle. Possibly as few as four ships might overwhelm its defenses. But first, Pakpakat would have to find the Vagabond again. A task that had taken 2 years the last time. Drayson called up the chart of the pursuit and studied it closely. Three ships were racing for search stations along the Vagabond's last heading. Lightning, 10 light-years out, Glorious, 20, and Marauder, 30. The improvised plan called for them to drop sensor buoys with hypercom repeaters at those entry points and then begin making short jumps out to the limits of sensor range, hoping to catch a glimpse of their quarry. The precision of the plan did not mask its weakness. Its slim chance of success depended on the Vagabond's making a single short jump. If it followed a short jump with a second jump on another heading, where there were no eyes to see or sensors to track, or if it carried the first jump out beyond the borders of the New Republic and into the chaos of the core. Grayson knew that Colonel Pakpakat had addressed an urgent appeal for more ships to both New Republic Intelligence and the Fleet Office. He also knew the likely answer to that appeal. The only real chance for us to catch her lies with you, Lando, Grayson said softly. The Senate's Council on Security and Intelligence announced no meetings, released no public reports, and met only in closed session in the field-shielded Room 030 deep in the sub-basements of the old Imperial Palace. Even Drayson found it difficult to discover when the CSI would take up Pakpakat's request, and when he did learn about that session, it was too late to listen in.
"Last item on the agenda is the Teljikon expedition," said General Carlos Rican.
Senator Kral Pragat of Vedantha, chairman of the council, leaned back in his chair and combed his fingers through his skull down.
What is there to decide? The mission was a failure. Close the books.
Lando Calrissian and his team are still aboard the Vagabond, Rican reminded him gently.
Praggett fumed. This is all so absurd. Pak Prakant allowed Calrissian and his staff, these amateurs, to intervene, and suddenly it becomes impossible to write off our losses in a professional manner.
Rican tried again. Senator Praggett, have the reports from Colonel Pak Prakant led you to reevaluate the potential gain if we succeed in recovering the Kella vessel?
No, General, I'm still quite convinced that this artifact is worthy of our interest, but I don't see that the circumstances justify sending a Force II Armada wandering through 1,000 cubic light years on what is very likely to be a futile effort.
Senator Amamadan, who represented the Badass on Coruscant, was more worried about the recent carnage caused by the Abatha. He spoke up.
With all the uncertainty in Farlax, we could surely find better uses for those ships than chasing a phantom. The Vagabond will turn up again.
Rican tried to steer the discussion to a conclusion.
If I might make a suggestion, if they are still alive, General Calrissian and his team will be highly motivated to act expeditiously. Anything they can do to impede the flight of the Kella vessel, they will do in the next several days. So it seems only prudent to allow Pak Prakant to continue the search for, say, another 15 days. He has only 4 vessels actively committed to the search at this point, so I think we can reasonably talk about downsizing our commitment to this project. If everyone will look at page 15 in the mission outline, the ship assignment list...
Under Lando's steady hand, the blue-white energy blade of the cutting blaster drew a straight line down the face of the bulkhead. But when Lando pulled the blaster away to inspect his work, he found that it had left no mark. The bulkhead was intact. He frowned.
Well, I guess I was a little too careful. Move the sled in just a little for me, Lobot.
After adjusting his position, Lando slashed the cutter downward across the face of the bulkhead. The brilliant glare of the blade left in its wake a clean, straight cut that vanished a fraction of a second later. Lando grunted.
Self-sealing bulkhead?
Lobot peered at the bulkhead. It would appear so.
Well, that's just dandy.
Lando shut off the cutting blaster.
I can't cut us a door because it hasn't the manners to stay cut.
Lobot gestured at the blaster. May I try something?
Be my guest.
Lobot switched the blade on the blaster to a pointed cone drill and pressed it against the wall.
The hole he had made began to close at once, but it took noticeably longer to vanish than the cut had.
Lando grinned.
Very clever, Lobot. Let's try a bigger hole. R2, do you have some sort of remote sensor you can stick through this time?
Lobot gestured toward the limpet. We could reach through and attach the limpet on the other side of the bulkhead. Both R2 and I are capable of receiving its sensor data.
I don't want to make quite that big a hole.
A small equipment panel on R2's body popped open, and the slender wand topped by a silver ball unfolded. Now Lando cut a hole nearly large enough to admit a man's clenched fist. Switching off the blaster, he pushed off from the wall and did a backward somersault, floating out of R2's way. The droid moved smoothly into position, extending the wand through the center of the opening and snatching it back at the last moment as the hole disappeared. Lando ordered,
"Show us, R2. Holoprojector."
The droid offered up a fisheye perspective of a round-walled passage that seemed to bend through the ship in 2 directions. There was no sign of life or machinery, nor any response to the cutting of the hole and the invasion of R2's scan probe.
Lando shook his head. Whatever it is, it could give us access to at least part of the ship.
He thought for a moment, then waved the blaster in the air.
Everyone off the sled. I need to make some modifications.
Modifications? Lobot asked.
Yeah, I think we need a frame for our door.
The equipment sled had a thick rectangular frame that contained the gyros, fuel cells, and thrust stabilizer system. The diamond-patterned metal grid that filled the frame provided lockdowns for gear kits and tools. Clinging to the sled with one hand and wielding the cutting blaster with the other, Lando slashed away where the grid joined the sled frame. When it was finished, the sled was in 2 pieces. Lando slid the selector on the cutting blaster to wide and went to work. Before Lando could even see clearly through to the other side, the hole began to close.
Let's go! Get it lined up!
The two men maneuvered the cut frame into position, and the bulkhead closed around it as though it were a filled fist. At that moment, they heard a deep, rumbling groan, an exit growl, the characteristic sound of part of a ship emerging from hyperspace nanoseconds before the rest as the jump seal collapsed.
Move it, R2, now!
The little droid jetted quickly toward the opening, towing the heavily loaded grid. For a moment, Lando thought the frame was too small, but R2 retracted his treads as far as they would go, turned his body, and cleared the opening by centimeters. The equipment grid passed through behind them.
Wait for me, R2!
3PO called, flailing his arms and legs in midair. Lobot followed quickly. Lando clipped the safety line from his contact suit's belt to the handhold of the frame and held his gloved hand out to 3PO.
Oh, thank you, Master Lando.
Then 3PO saw Lando's eyes widen in alarm.
What is it, sir?
Watching from the inner passage, Lobot saw the same thing Lando had seen. At the outer bulkhead, a small opening quickly irised into an airlock that revealed starry blackness beyond. The external mics on the suit picked up the hiss of outrushing air. Lando did not take the time to answer 3PO's concerned inquiry.
Heads up! Incoming!
He bellowed, and swung 3PO by the arms toward the inner doorway. Bracing himself against the frame, Lobot reached through, caught 3PO's foot, and dragged him into the inner passage. It was all Lobot could do to keep himself from being sucked through. R2 was being dragged inexorably back down the inner passage toward the opening, clinging determinedly to the equipment grid. Lando dangled helplessly at the end of his safety line, his feet banging against the edge of the outer airlock as the air grabbed at him. He shouted into the comlink,
"You have to cut the frame. It'll pull out. The rest of the hole will close. Do it!"
"Not with you on that side."
Lobot caught the end of the safety line and braced his legs wide. Then he began hauling on the line, hand over hand, reeling Lando in like a great fish. As soon as Lando was clear, Lobot pulled out the cutting blaster and slashed the frame in two places. It spun free and tumbled out through the airlock. Seconds later, the hole had closed, leaving them in silence. The silence did not last long. In the mysterious hollow spaces of the Vagabond, the rumble of the entry growl echoed for a long time.
"Blast,"
Lando said.
"She's jumped again."
Lando looked around.
"The first thing we need is a way to find this spot again. And this passage is notably lacking in landmarks."
Using the cutting blaster, he sliced a small triangle off one corner of the equipment grid. He cut a slit in the bulkhead, inserted one edge of the triangle, and held it there until the bulkhead closed around it. Lobot drifted up with a short length of cord in one hand. He looped it through one of the diamond-shaped openings in the grid and tied the ends together.
"One knot equals the first marker. We'll put two knots on the next one."
"Okay." Lando turned away from the wall. "All right. We are in a survival situation. This ship has now jumped twice, and we have to assume that it has lost any pursuit. That means our first priority is to locate and disable the hyperdrive and stop this ship."
3PO protested.
"But Master Lando, if we disable the hyperdrive, we'll be stranded. Would it not be more prudent to find the masters of this vessel and petition them to take us back to Coruscant?"
3PO, I think we're the masters of this vessel now. We have to be, if we're going to survive."
He ticked off the priorities on his fingers.
"First, we have to find some way to stop this ship. Second, we find out where that leaves us. Third, we find out who our nearest friend is. Fourth, we find some way to signal them. If we get all that done before Lobot and I run out of air and the droids run out of power, then we can worry about who built the Vagabond and why."
He pointed a finger to the left, then to the right.
"What's your best guess?"
he asked Lobot.
"Hyperdrive aft or forward?"
"Center of mass is the most efficient placement,"
Lobot said.
"Forward."
Lando nodded.
"Then let's get going."
Colonel Pepacat hovered near the communications station as his tech received the emergency action directive from the fleet office. His face betrayed no emotion as he read. Then he summoned his intelligence officer and tipped his display upward so he too could read the directive.
We have just received a fleet-wide level one alert. My request for additional ships for the search has been denied. I am under orders to release one gunship and two interdiction pickets from their duties so that they may return to their respective commands.
The officer shook his head. That's nearly half our remaining strength, sir. What do they expect us to do?
Fail, apparently.
The procession through the passageway of the Tel'sh Khan Vagabond was led by Lando, combat blaster in hand. Following close behind was R2, towing the equipment grid. Last in line was Lobot, with 3PO riding on the back of his contact suit like a child perched on his father's back.
Lando peered over his shoulder at them. This is my fault. I should have gone ahead and gotten a thrust belt for 3PO. Maybe even a complete thrust harness and power pack.
We have them. Have them on Lady Luck, said Lobot. Everything could not fit on one sled.
I'd trade most everything on that grid for a couple of refill packs. I never thought we'd be in zero G as long as it looks like we will be.
Forever, maybe, Lando thought grimly. Lobot looked around at the smooth-walled passageway.
It is an interesting design choice. The Keller appear to have done everything they could to make it hard for us to move about here. There's no artificial gravity, no spin. The bulkheads are non-magnetic and have no friction traps, handholds, or zip lines.
Oh, what's so interesting about that? Lobot looked surprised by the question.
The Keller were planet dwellers. How did they expect to get around in this ship?
Lando grunted.
Maybe the Keller are giant slugs as wide as this tunnel.
Perhaps. But even giant slugs are probably more comfortable in a gravity field. I can't help thinking that somewhere in this vessel there must be a switch that would make all of this much easier.
The passage seemed to have no end. It curved away in front of Lando like an ever-receding horizon.
Am I the only one who's noticed? This ship is only 1,500 meters long. We should be a kilometer out in front of the bow by now.
Lobot pointed out,
the conduits we saw on the surface of the Vagabond wind around it in complex patterns. If we are inside one of those, as I believe we are, that could account for the length of this passage.
No, it couldn't, because we're still heading forward. Aren't we? If this passage had turned back, we'd have noticed.
Would we?
Asked Lobot. Most of another hour dragged by, and then they found themselves back where they had started, at the grid triangle they had put in place earlier.
This is most distressing. What are we to do now?
We start playing smarter, said Lando. How much carbon line do we have?
Lobot knew the answer without looking.
2 spools, 5,000 meters each. Why?
If we keep going around in circles, we could find ourselves unable to get anywhere for lack of propellant. There's not enough grid to spare to make handholds the length of the passage, but we can start stringing some hand lines, and they'll help keep us from getting fooled again.
Lobot nodded.
Yes, we can build a topological map. We will at least know the relationships between the places we have been, even if the exact geometry escapes us.
According to the counter on the line spool, they had gone 884 meters down the passage, staking 4 improvised line anchors along the way, when they came to the junction.
This is nuts, Lando said, hovering before the twin openings. This passage didn't branch last time we were through here.
If we've been through here before,
Lobot said.
Lando turned. Don't start with me.
It was not a jest. It remains a possibility that these passages are channels or conduits, related in some way to the operation of the ship.
Conduits? For what?
Gases, energy plasmas, electrical charges, Lobot said. And conduits generally require stops, valves, and switches of some sort. This is likely to be one directly ahead of us. There may be another somewhere behind us that placed us on this path.
Lando frowned.
Which passage do we take?
Lobot shook his head.
It will not matter, Lando. Just choose.
It did not matter. The passage Lando chose ended 300 meters later after turning downward, inward, nearly 90 degrees. When they doubled back, the alternate passage led them to another junction that was the reverse of the first, and to another short passage that turned sharply before ending abruptly.
There's something down there,
Lando said, lingering as the others turned back.
Both dead ends go to the same place.
hyperdrive could be down there. Lobach could tell that Lando was powerfully tempted to test his theory by blasting a hole in the wall, and touched his shoulder.
Come,
the cyborg said.
I'm tired of this.
I know, said Lobach. But you know that disabling a hyperdrive and destabilizing one are two very different matters. We will find a better way.
Lando glanced at his telltale readout.
All right. But if we haven't found it by the time these numbers reach single digits, I'm coming back here. I'm not just going to wait for death, Lobach.
I would not expect that of you, but for now, please, my friend.
They jetted back up the passage together, side by side. With an artfulness born of desperation, Lando and Lobach managed to improvise 41 line anchors from the equipment grid and the supplies attached to it. These anchors secured more than 8 kilometers of hand lines, covering 3 major passages and more than 15 branches. In the course of their explorations, the team cataloged 11 stop valves, 18 switch valves, and 3 different routes back to their original marker. The purpose of the mechanisms and the pattern of their movements remained impenetrable, but R2-D2's holographic map steadily took on more useful form, framing the unknown with the known. Through it all, the vagabond bored on through hyperspace, seemingly oblivious to the passengers within. They found the coupling panel in the 71st hour of their imprisonment. Nearly 2 meters long and more than 1 meter wide, the panel was set flush in what they had arbitrarily dubbed the ceiling of the passage.
Master Lando, what do you think it is?
Some sort of intelligence test, maybe, Lando said, trying to peer through one of the larger diameter sockets. Anyone feel up to taking it?
Well, it does bear some resemblance to the busy box Ambassador Nugget gave to Anakin Solo, Cecil said. My, how he enjoyed spinning the wheels and pushing blocks through the holes.
Shut up, 3PO.
Yes, sir.
Lando studied the device. It looks like some sort of bus port to me, like the maintenance cabinet on Lady Luck. Plug in here and you have access to the ship's systems.
Lobach was cautious.
The design of this vessel apparently provides for mechanisms to be concealed until they are needed. I ask you to consider why this mechanism has appeared now.
Which gives us a chance to slip in and take care of ourselves, Lando said. These couplings weren't designed for us, but maybe we can make use of them anyway. Energy is energy. R2 can cope with thermal, plasma, or electrical force, and data is data. If R2 can read it, 3PO can interpret.
Lando, you have no basis for concluding that this is a system force. It is more likely that the function of this mechanism is related to the function of these passages.
Which is what? Holding cell? Ventilator? Rodent maze? Are we not supposed to touch this either? Blast it all. How long are we supposed to wait before we do something?
You have not had more than 2 hours sleep in nearly 3 days. Your sense of urgency has been heightened.
That's right. I haven't had anything to eat in so long. I cut a friend dead for a fracking cracker. My water supply tastes like it's gone around 6 times already. Are you more machine than man? Doesn't any of this affect you?
I am as human as you are. I doubt that you could be any hungrier than I am. My water supply is as disagreeable to me as yours is to you. But I do not understand the discoveries we have made.
Then don't you want to learn more? I want the droids to try to interface with this port, that's all.
Please, listen. I do not understand why structures as extensive as these passages have been inert throughout our tenure on this ship, or why we have been permitted to move about in them unimpeded. These questions trouble me, and I am concerned that the appearance of this artifact may signal the end of either or both of those conditions.
All the more reason for us to make the first move. R2, 3PO, come on up here. I want you to try to interface with the vagabond.
R2 stopped a safe distance from the panel and began to scan it, his dome rotating back and forth as he brought different sensors to bear.
3PO called out the results of each reading to the two men who watched from opposite sides of the passage. Neither of them saw 3PO reach out and clutch one of the projections on the panel to steady himself. But both heard a loud burst of static on the contact suit comm unit and saw a blue glow in the passage.
Gracious me!
The panel was crawling with blue-white snakes of energy. They danced up 3PO's arm, rapidly intensifying. Lobach shouted,
3PO, don't let go!
The
the warning came too late. 3PO had already pulled back his hand. A massive bolt of energy leapt from the panel to 3PO's hand, flashed up his arm and one side of his head, and sprang to the face of the passage. Before anyone could react, it had raced away down the passage and disappeared. The bolt left 3PO convulsing and spinning in midair, his right arm burnt and smoking, his head quivering as though an actuator were caught in a feedback loop. R2 would not allow Lando to approach 3PO. He had to content himself with watching from several meters away while Lobot and R2 hovered over the protocol droid and tried to assess the damage. After a few minutes, Lobot joined Lando.
3PO's arm is beyond repair, given that we have no spare parts. R2 is trying to free the lateral actuator and restore freedom of motion to his head.
Lando reached out and caught Lobot's forearm.
You were right about these passages. They're getting ready to...
Something moved in the periphery of his vision.
Blast! He exclaimed. Get away from the wall! R2, look out!
Lando dragged Lobot toward the center of the passage just as the energy halo appeared at the horizon of their vision and sped toward them. It surrounded them for only a moment as it raced through on its course.
It's gone all the way around?
Lobot asked.
Yes, Lando replied.
It doesn't seem to have lost any strength at all.
No, Lando said. You were right. These passages are conduits. Superconducting accumulators. Perhaps even some sort of gas tube cascade generator.
Lobot nodded slowly.
For the weapons. It has to be for the weapons.
That panel is the ballast. 3PO created an arc path while it was building up the fire. Probably prematurely. He may have caused the system to report a failure, buying us a little time as it resets.
The weapons are useless in hyperspace. That explains our reprieve.
It also answers your question about the panel. About why it showed up now.
Smart.
She's a smart lady. The last thing I do before I enter an unfriendly room is check my weapon. All at once, the ship began to groan and growl. Lando released Lobot and dove toward the equipment grid, wresting the sensor missile from its restraints.
R2! Matt! What's the shortest way to the outer hull?
Lobot translated.
He's not answering you.
He closed his eyes, then pointed.
Through there, 18 meters. But I don't know what's between here and the hull.
I'll tell you when I get back.
Lando drew his blaster, burned a hole in the direction Lobot had pointed, and was gone. Quickly, Lando cut a hole in the hull, then, holding onto the line, let the limpet be sucked out into the rushing darkness of space. Just before the hole sealed shut, he activated the limpet sensors and armed its attachment system. That job accomplished, he turned to examine the compartments he had crashed through en route to the outer hull. Unlike in the accumulators, where the entire face of the passage gave off a pale yellow glow, the only light in the outer compartment came from the twin ear lamps located on either side of Lando's helmet. When he swept their beams through the dark that enclosed him, a great emptiness swallowed the light in all directions. Only when he looked up, away from the outer hull, did the light reflect back to him any of the substance of the ship. And what the light revealed there made Lando shiver. The inner wall was a portrait gallery. Thousands of different alien faces, each gazing out from its own hexagonal cell. The faces were unlike any Lando had ever seen, yet he keenly felt the intelligence in the large round eyes that seemed to seek him out. Lando read in the faces of the Kella strength and surrender, and a terrible knowledge of the impermanence of life. The beings who had sat for these portraits and the artisans who had created them had known that these images might be all that survived them, and they had held nothing back. There was a circular gap in the mural where Lando had burned his way through from behind. Four faces had been damaged and one obliterated forever. Lando fought off sharp pangs of guilt as he jetted up toward the mural and reopened a hole at the same spot. Then he turned to the surviving faces.
I'm sorry, but this is your tomb. Your memorial. I'm trying to keep it from becoming mine. I like to think that if life meant this much to you, you'd be rooting for me to succeed.
Lando found the others where he had left them, still tending to 3PO. The golden droid was the only one to react strongly. strongly to his return, turning his head toward Lando and greeting him cheerfully.
Master Lando.
One glowing eye flickered.
What are you doing on Yavin 4? Why are you wearing that costume? You know, you look rather like a droid.
3PO, take a look around. You recognize this place? The droid's head swiveled.
Oh, yes, I see. The killer vagabond. I seem to have had an accident.
He turned and clanged R2 on the dome with his good arm.
And it's all your fault, you good-for-nothing saboteur. You belong in a weak compactor along with all the other...
No, it was my fault. I gave the orders. I made the mistake. I'm sorry, 3PO. I promise you we'll get you back to specs as soon as we get home.
It is I who should apologize, Master Hambone. I am sure that my clamminess was the approximate cause of my mishap.
Don't try to talk, 3PO. Just keep running your diagnostics.
Lando turned to R2.
R2, I was able to place the limpet on the outside of the ship. I need you to pick up its signal and make it available to Lobot.
Receiving data, Lobot said. R2 said to tell you that he's doing it for 3PO, not for you.
I don't care if he does it for the blood prince of Vesalia as long as it gets done.
Lobot gave Lando the coordinates.
We are presently 106 light years past the border of the New Republic, in the core. The nearest inhabited system is Crockett.
Lando repeated.
Crockett. Toga Brill.
Excuse me?
At last report, Crockett was controlled by the Imperial warlord Foga Brill. Well, we're sure not going to be putting out any calls for help in this neighborhood. All right, let's get out of this energy accumulator while things are still quiet. We'll go back through where I just came out. The first thing we're going to do when we get over there is get 6 hours rest, all of us. I should have insisted on it sooner. I'm sorry, R2. I don't know if it would have changed anything, but I never meant for 3PO to get hurt.
He told me to tell you that he is considering giving you a second chance, said Lobot.
After their rest, Lando and Lobot activated 3PO first. It took only a short conversation to discover that the droid had regained most of his verbal faculties. All that remained of his vocal injury was a background buzz when he spoke. The team went back to their explorations. They had entered a chamber 15 meters long and 9 meters wide. At first, it looked as infuriatingly seamless and featureless as the airlock. Lobot studied the walls.
The Keller aesthetic demands that nothing be evident until it is needed. But how does the structure know when a concealed feature is needed? How do the Keller communicate their desires to their creation? We know at least one answer. It responds to touch.
Lando frowned. Last time I touched this ship, it tried to leave us out as a meal for space slugs. Lobot went on, absorbed in his own thoughts.
I've been reconsidering the incident in the airlock in light of 3PO's accident. It's possible that the control you activated was an emergency lock-close switch, which functioned exactly as intended.
What? No, that doesn't make sense.
It's even possible that we asked the vagabond to attempt an escape.
You're saying that if 3PO could read Keller, we'd have seen a sign saying, in case of emergency, pull here? Lando shook his head. Now, here's the problem with your theory. The ship tried to spit us out without us ever getting near that control yoke.
But when she tried, we were burning a hole in an element of her primary defense system. A hole that the repair mechanisms were unable to close in the usual amount of time.
I take your point. But after we did that, the ship has to have known we weren't Kella and we weren't friendly.
If the ship had the consciousness you attribute to it and had formed an intent to remove us, it could have done so at any time while we were in the accumulator. It could have opened the hull under your feet while you were placing the limpet. Yet it didn't. I've been asking myself from the beginning what kind of intelligence we're facing. It's the most interesting question before us.
3PO had been listening attentively.
Pardon me, sir, but the ship's behavior can only be properly evaluated in the appropriate cultural context.
I disagree, 3PO. The conditions of the test dictate the form of the answers. If that were not so, the millions of species in this galaxy would have so little in common that there would be no need for your services.
He's got a point, 3PO. No matter where I've gone or who I've been dealing with, the one thing that holds the deal together is that everybody's looking out for their own end. It's the motor that powers the universe.
The conditions of the test are sentience and survival. The form of the answer is to identify and neutralize threats. This ship has failed the test. Therefore, I conclude this ship is neither sentient nor controlled by sentient beings. It is a work of great ingenuity, but it is not intelligent. I now believe the Vagabond is an automaton of great sophistication, employing rule-based responses incorporated into its fundamental structure.
What rule could it have been following when it tried to suck me out into space?
You were using a blaster and caused a breach which did not heal, said Lovat. You could have triggered a rule specifying that fires be extinguished by exposure to vacuum.
Lando weighed Lobot's argument. So, you want us to start pushing buttons at random, is that it?
We know it responds to touch. We were probably wrong to conclude that it responds negatively.
Lobot jetted to the nearest part of the enclosing wall, reached out both hands, and pressed his palms lightly against the surface. When nothing happened, he started sliding to his left. The wall of the chamber began to rise under his hands as though it were shaping itself to an invisible mold. Lobot retreated to the middle of the chamber, but the transformation continued. Broad disks appeared and grew into cylinders. Ridges defined long arcs across the display, shadowing the ripple patterns that spilled down the curves of a hemisphere. Color appeared, swirls of pale blue and spikes of soft yellow, and none respected the boundaries of the geometries they overlaid. Lando's eyes twinkled with delight. I never thought you were the artistic type, Lobot. Returning to the wall, Lobot touched the drum-like surface of one of the cylinders. The chamber was suddenly filled with music. I'm not letting you have all the fun. Lando jetted to the opposite wall. The two men flew about the chamber like nimble, persistent insects. Until they had tested its entire surface. There was something marvelous about how a simple touch of the hand brought the empty chamber to life. For Lando, the most splendid discovery of all was the doorway that opened for him at one end of the chamber, and its twin, which Lobot manifested at the other. Over the next several hours, R2 added 20 chambers to his map of the Vagabond, numbering each in turn as the team visited it. To help them remember where they had been, he also recorded for each a fisheye hollow of what Lando had dubbed the pop-ups. They discovered two basic patterns for the pop-ups. Eight of the chambers were like the first one. One side would reveal a large figure that might have been a sigil, a sculpture, or symbolic writing. The opposite face would reveal a finely detailed geometric design that Lando and Lobot were convinced was the map of a temple or small city. Somewhere in every map room was a key that triggered Kella music, though every song was different from the others. Apart from the music, the pop-ups in the map rooms appeared to be static. They remained on display as long as the team lingered. When they moved on to another chamber and the connecting portal closed, the pop-ups vanished as quickly as they had appeared. After every map room came what Lobot dubbed a gadget room, where they found a variety of mostly mysterious pop-ups which might move, hum, or change color or shape when touched, but none caused any detectable change in the status of the ship. Chamber 21 was another map room. The sigil resembled a feathered V embracing a cluster of fist-sized spheres. The map was an irregular pentagon with one side twice as long as the others, and the same shape echoed in the open area at the center. Neither Lobot nor Lando could find a music key, but their attempts triggered something quite different. At first, there was just a pale pink glow slowly pulsing in a structure near the long outer wall. Suddenly, that part of the map erupted in a gout of fire that leapt a full meter up the wall. The team fell back in surprise as 3PO cried out,
"They found us! R2, save yourself!"
Lobot moved closer again.
"It's a hollow. A recording."
"No, it's real."
Lando pointed at Lobot's suit.
"Look at your suit sensors. Wait, R2, don't!"
He lunged toward the droid, who was busily unlimbering the nozzle of his fire extinguisher. By the time the struggle was over, the entire map had been replaced by a five-sided black star, and the chamber was half-choked by smoke. Lando herded them back into Chamber 20, where they waited the 2 minutes they had learned it took for a room to reset. When they re-entered 21, the black scar was gone, and with it the smoke. With their backs pressed against the sigil, they watched a replay. As the pillar of fire rose, the shock rippled out through the rest of what must have been a Keller city, destroying the neat symmetry. Lobot looked to Lando.
These are history lessons. Something terrible happened to the Keller city that was under this sign.
There's something else going on, too. R2, what's the oxygen component now?
The answer relayed through 3PO was 15%.
Son of a... R2, come with me. There's something we have to check.